Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Dun dun. Just want to let everybody know that
his pride and joy is the St. Louis Cardinals because St. Louis Rams rather because he was born in St. Louis. And tomorrow he's going to join his Uncle Tommy and I in the press box at the Buccaneers game for a game that is truly going to be a great game burner for both sides. They both need it. So, Ty, how you doing tonight? Hello? Yeah, you on?
Hey.
Oh, there you go.
This is Zito.
Yeah.
Hey, how you feeling tonight? I'm glad to be back.
Good.
Happy holidays to you. It's Tommy G at this end. So, happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays.
Hey, happy holidays to
my friend.
To you.
Thank you
for
joining.
Tonight we got a big program. We're going to have Evander Holyfield on. We're also going to have our regular historian, Dr. Chris, followed by the great Tony Thompson, who's going to be fighting in Britain in February. So Tony's going to enlighten us on that. Then we'll be followed by our former founding father, along with Bob, Aaron Jacob will be joining us to end up the program. So it's a big program. We're looking forward to it. We first want to say thank you very much to these guys here on the radio, but also to each and every one of you for listening every Saturday night and making this program a success. We couldn't do it without your help, and we appreciate each and every listener that we have out there. As we said, we started this program many, many moons ago, and we never thought when Tommy and Bob and I were in the studio in Bradenton, in Florida, we were lucky if they heard us three blocks away. And many times we didn't have a real phone to work with. And, our tower would go down, but going over to Blog Talk Radio, we're now coasting in at between 61,000 has been our lowest this year. 72,000 has been our highest. So we really appreciate each and every person that that dials in here and listens up to us. So we're going to get started here. Tonight is a big fight up there in Allentown, and I just didn't get enough response from the casino guys to get you in there. But I did get one from Ty. Your buddy is back out of his respite.
Yes,
and
exactly.
He is going to be fighting again in at the Delaware Track, and Casino, and we have contacted them, and we're going to get the your press passes for the fight.
Outstanding.
So
he actually gave him a call. So.
Yeah. We want to get him on the air before he goes in and ring, and let him know that you're coming, and let him know that we're still right in this corner for him.
All right, I'll give him a call, and we'll see if possible we can have him on maybe next weekend.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be off next weekend.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Now, we want to also announce that the second week of January, we have a young man by the name of Kelly Pavlik that's going to be on with us. Benny did talk to him yesterday, and we did secure the time, and so we're looking forward to that, too. So it's...
he's got a huge fight coming up against Mr. Andre Ward. So
yes.
It'd be really good to talk to him and see what his mindset is.
Well, you know, I was just reading one of the trades that Adamek is evidently coming in 20 pounds heavier than Stevie tonight.
But you know what? You know what, Butch? Zito and I just finished watching that Thomas Adamek Stevie Cunningham fight. Adamek was definitely the bigger man. Stevie fought a brilliant fight. He boxed brilliantly. And I thought he won the fight 8-4. Initially, when the decision was rendered, it was called a draw. But then Michael Buffer picked up the microphone and said a mistake had been made, and the decision was given to Thomas Adamek by a majority decision. Though, Zito and I would both tell you that Stevie Cunningham actually boxed circles around him.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It sounds like a Manny Pacquiao fight.
Well,
no,
a bit of a different ending.
No, that's the last one. The one he got taken away from you, the Bradley fight.
Oh, the Bradley fight. Okay, yes, okay.
I'm going to let you guys talk, and maybe you could expand on the fights last night while I get Evander on the phone.
But I thought that the fight didn't have as much disparity, but Demick just looked a little. They gave him the decision, and I totally don't agree with it. I thought he won 4 rounds out of 12. He looked like a lot of times he couldn't pull the trigger, especially with the jab in his face. It seemed like he waited till the end of the fight to maybe find his opportunities to press his offense in quite a bit successfully sometimes, but that just wasn't enough to win the fight at all to me. He wasn't busy enough, and he wasn't effectively busy enough.
You know, Demick was a guy who was never fleet of foot, but he always had a fundamental base, and he was always a very well-rounded boxer, very technically sound. And it seems like, in his heavyweight incarnation, and as he's gotten older, he's 36 now, as a Stephen Cunningham, but it seems like to me, Zito, Demick has kind of devolved into a flat-footed power puncher, one who doesn't even pull the trigger that often. And it made for a recipe for a losing effort against Stevie Cunningham. And even Roger Bloodsworth, his trainer, was exhorting Abraham to throw more punches. Abraham, you had me thinking Arthur Abraham, because like Arthur Abraham, he wasn't throwing a lot of punches. And his trainer was exhorting him to throw more punches. And it just seemed like Thomas doesn't seem to be able to pull the trigger like he used to.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a good fighter. He still has the fundamentals, and he has a bit of power. It's just him getting there. He doesn't seem to get there at heavyweight like he was getting there at cruiserweight.
It seems like his days of elite as an elite heavyweight to me are kind of on the decline. Ever since he lost to Vitaly Klitschko, Zito, and I think you said this to me off air, he hasn't looked the same.
Yeah, he hasn't looked the same at all. Maybe the Klitschko fight has something to do with that. On the other hand, Stevie Cunningham, he looked real good. He looked real good. He looked disciplined at times, and when he got undisciplined, he got caught. But for the most part, he stayed disciplined. He stayed with the game plan, and he hit the Demick with some good, hard power shots.
Hey, guys, we have a wonderful fighter, a nice gentleman, a guy who Dr. Chris Panarella has met many times, and I'm going to get Chris on the line here in a minute. Mr. Evander Holyfield is on with us. Evander, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
We're doing great. Can you bring us up to date as to what you're doing at this point in time?
Well, I just hanging on by a thread, still training a little bit.
Good.
Staying in shape.
Okay. Well, you were always in good shape. I mean, we've always talked about that. Ty, you want to? You have your question?
Well, Evander, first of all, good evening. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good, Evander. I have to be honest with you and say it's a thrill to speak to you. Zito, who's on the air with us, will tell you that you are one of my all-time favorite fighters. I've always respected your warrior skill and the heart and determination you brought into the ring. With that said, is your goal still to go ahead and conquer the heavyweight division, topple one of the Klitschkos before you call it a day?
Well, I was hoping to do that. You know, I was, you know, when you're no longer the guy that you know, it's seen that people have, I guess, kind of let boxing, let people, you know, do what they just want to do, meaning that force competition. Usually the fight is about who draw the most, you know, who makes the big fights, who the guys, and they tell, you tend to tell the champion, look, hey, you know, we not going to pay to see you fight somebody that we know you're going to beat. Like, you know, somebody who going, you know, it's almost like when I fought, George Foreman. They kind of look at, oh, well, you know, if George kept him, you know, it may be one, you know, I guess this could be it. You know, and it turned out to be a
fight. Evander, I got a good question for you. I want your opinion on this. Back in the years when the heavyweights were a lot smaller in weight, like Joe Louis, Marciano, and so forth, I argue with Tex Cobb. You're familiar with Tex. I say, if they had had weight training and had strength coaches, they would have been formidable, even against today's heavyweights, because they were muscle-bound, always crept into the gyms in the 50s. And you weren't allowed to do anything other than a push-up once in a while. I mean, they didn't want you to get muscle-bound. They said it would ruin your reflexes. Well, when you came along and built up from 175 to your 218, 214, you kind of blew that myth out the window. What do you think? Do you think did you find a change in your reflexes at all when you built yourself up?
Well, I think doing it properly, that, you know, my trainer at the time was Tim Hallmark, and he majored in this thing's flexibility and lifting weights and all this and stuff. So I went against the odds. Lou Duva was one of them guys that was all the time. He didn't believe in weightlifting and all that. And he cried, oh, no.
I knew Lou very well.
And with me,
I can hear him now.
I was the guy that said, well, you know what? Look, I'm willing to take the chances. My work became,
Right, you wanted to be a heavyweight. Yeah, you were a formidable light heavyweight. I loved your left hook when you were in the amateurs. I thought you had a great left hook. And I said, he's going to go somewhere with that left hook. And go ahead.
Yeah, that's what kind of got me there, you know, the flexibility. You know, I ended up with, you know, not just weights. I had a flexibility coach, and I had someone that, you know, just stretched me, make sure that, you know, when I did lift weights, you know, not to get so tight that, you know, it would allow me to get hit a lot like that. So, it was like George Benton, you know, even some defense, man. You, I don't care who you are, you can get hit by everybody if you don't stay that long.
Yeah. If you're in the ring, you're going to get hit, especially the size of the guys you were fighting. They when Riddick Bowe, he had a lot of weight and a lot of height on you. He had everything, height, weight,
speed. He was fast, too. You know, it's not like he was just a guy. He could fight in and out, you know. So I fought a lot of good fighters.
Yeah. Oh, you did. He was just born big, that guy. He was a big guy. And he never lifted weights or trained or did the kind of work you did. He just got by on natural ability.
But
one
thing with Riddick Bowe, unlike the Klitschko brothers, Riddick Bowe really could fight inside, and that's what surprised me in his fights against you, Evander, that he was capable of fighting inside and throwing short uppercuts and hooks. That was impressive for a big man to fight inside.
Yeah, he had kind of quick. He was quick inside too. He wasn't one of the guys that had to hold you and kind of hold you to get you to keep you still. He can flow with you and catch you with something big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an uppercut was his ideal punch against you. I saw all those fights, but you gave him a hard time. You know, they were enjoyable fights. I can tell you that. So you had flexibility coaches and you did more than just lift weights. You did the whole routine with flexibility, stretching.
Yeah. Because there's things that people, you know, people. Oh, you know, well, you know, if he lifts the weights, he don't. He's like, well, yeah, if you don't stretch, yeah, it will. You know, it will make you tighter and all this, and you know, you fatigue quicker. But when you put the flexibility, you get the stretching coach and stuff like that, which you know, take another hour and a half of your day doing that. It's a lot of work.
How long did it take you? And building your body up from cruiserweight to heavyweight, Mackie Shillstone, because obviously it was well documented how you know he came in. And he was one of the first strength and conditioning coaches to really come into boxing. How important was that to you?
Well, when Mackie Shillstone did Spinks, Michael Spinks.
Okay.
He didn't do me. I a guy named Tim Hallmark did work with me.
Hey, Vander, I'm going to tell you somebody that lifted weights and didn't do it correctly, and he fought you for the title in Atlanta. The young man from Upper Darby there, Darby. You know what I'm talking about? Bert.
Bert Cooper.
Bert Cooper was a weightlifter and a bodybuilder there for a short while before he started boxing. And it didn't bother him that much. I mean, he was a small guy, too. He wasn't very big. But he built himself up. I remember when he fought as a light heavyweight around Philly.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He was the first guy I ever knew that did that, and then you were the second, but you put much more weight on than he did, and you did it in a better manner. I thought that you got better results. I don't think Bert had the advantage of a good trainer, you know, and so forth, a good strength coach like you did.
Well, with me, you know, I started boxing at the age of 8 years old, and you know, so you know, I actually had the boxing skills. You know, I did it for 13 years. 13 years,
mm-hmm.
as you know, that's from the age to our 21 years old. Then, you know, moving from that thing. You know, I had the skills.
Mm-hmm.
Evander, I have a question for you. What was your most difficult fight, or the most difficult fighter that you fought against, and what was your greatest ring triumph in your estimation?
Well, I would say. My difficult fight was with Dwight Muhammad Quawe. That was a 10-round fight in Atlanta. And it's not, you know, the guy. I'm telling you, the guy had a great defense and he put that relentless pressure on you. And you know, I can hit it, but when he get you know my elbows and. Getting under his shot, then he just you hitting something, but you know you hurting yourself hitting him on the elbows, and he just didn't have no target. He was short. He didn't have no target. And you know,
how about that big head he had? He had that big round head, no neck. He was a hard guy to fight. I watched him.
Yeah.
I watched that fight about a week ago. It was on. A rerun, and I said to myself, Evander's having a hard time against this guy, and I knew he would because he is difficult to fight. He comes in,
well, that
like
was
you
only
said.
That was only your 13th, 14th fight, too, right, in your pro career?
That's my 12th fight.
Yeah, wow. Wow.
You know, my 12th fight, and I had never been past 8.
<We're 15. laughs> And they throw you. I mean, they would never throw somebody with 12 fights in, never been past 8 against Dwight Muhammad Quawe in the ring with him in the ring today. They would never do that.
I'm like, man, I'm you know, they you know, he might sink or swim. I made it though.
It's the old joke of the your trainer said, he can't hurt us, you know. Well, he's not getting hit in there. He puts it right in there, man. I'll tell you what, he was a tough guy to fight. I saw him. I was good friends with Frankie Fletcher And we were in the gym together up there with Frankie. And I followed his career along, and then he just outgrew the middleweight division. He got so stocky and heavy-handed and heavy-armed. I mean, he was a formidable opponent, I thought, for anybody. I mean, he gave Michael Spitz a hard time, too.
Yep. Well, he's a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer, so I think well-deserved. Evander, a gentleman you were in the ring with, and I remember before I say that, I preface this by saying I remember your move from cruiser to heavyweight, and the thought process was that you were well-built, but you were, you know, thinly framed. And they questioned your durability, whether you could take it. It sounds funny to imagine that now, but they questioned your durability and whether you could take a heavyweight punch. And a fight to me, and I think to the general public, that really showed that you were heavyweight material, you know, as far as born and bred, willing to stand in there with a tough heavyweight, was with the gentleman who just passed, Michael Doakes. Tell me what it was like fighting Michael Doakes, being in the ring, and you know, what that fight was, because that was a tooth-and-nail fight. You took some big shots, and you came firing right back.
Well, Michael Doakes, when I remember the time that came fight Michael Doakes, and I had watched Michael Doakes do amateur, and I knew he had real fast reflex and all this. And, of course, my trainer, Lou Duber, telling me, he can't beat you. He's an old man. Like that. So, Michael Doakes is 30 years old. He was 30, and I was 20, and I think I was 26 or 27. He's an old man. Now, he's just 30. And, he was on, he was talking about he was on drugs and all this, and you know what? He went to Australian and got his blood filtered and all this, but you know what? You can't bring your body back. You got it. You know, after four rounds, he done. After that four round, he just got started. and the fight, you know, it was a good fight. And that fight, you know, that was my really first major test in the heavyweight division, because he was just as quick. He was just as quick and all this and stuff. But the only problem is, you know, his legs, his movement wasn't, he had that movement like he used to have. And I had the movement, and he couldn't keep up with the moves, and I was always able to get that last shot. And, you know, and eventually, you know, I caught him with that, left uppercut. And, you know, it knocked him back into the rope. But when he came back on that road, I was there with the right hand. that fight there in the 10th round.
Was he a real, real heavy puncher?
Well, he was quick. He was quick. He was very quick. You know, so he had to snap in the punch. So that mean that he hit with them unexpected shots.
Right.
Unexpected shots and stuff like that. And, you know, when people have a quick hand, like Tyson, one of them guys that got real good snap in the shot. But, you know, it can get you out. It can get you out quick because it got the snap on it. By me being in boxing a long time, it's like sometimes you can get too close to a guy and he never can hit you hard, or you can get too far. So, you know, so Michael Doakes is the guy that, Michael Doakes is the guy that you get too far out of the ring, he'll slap.
Okay.
If you get right there in the ring, you get the thunder. And Tyson, the same thing. Tyson, if you get close, he can't hit you hard. But if you pull away from him, you right there in the power. And so, you know, so with me, I always knew, you know, either you find out that the breaking point of the power. If you're too close, that's messing people up. You're too far back can mess people. So you know it's that you have to find, know where that power zone at for them, and not, you know, understand I'm gonna act like I'm gonna be right there and get back, or I'm gonna act like I'm far back and get in to make it go over me. like that. So, you know, I was very good in that. So a lot of time I didn't get hit by a lot of the big shots that people thought.
Okay. Speaking of power, let me ask you a real quick question. What about George Foreman's power? Was it as formidable as the reputation states?
Well, it was. I'm telling you, even at 42, it's almost like you can somebody can whack you, and somebody can just drop something heavy on you and then smash your finger. You didn't know he the one that smashed your finger. Oh God, no! he was slow, and you know that you supposed to have got out the way of that. You ain't supposed to have hit that. And George was one of them guys that. His timing was so good, but he was slow. You had to pull your head back. By the time your head get back, his punch just getting there. And so that's how good his timing was. He would do that because I'm like that. How in the world is this guy knocking guys out? All of a sudden, we're showing in slow motion. The guy don't want to move his head back. By the time he get to bring his head back, Joy punch just getting there. Bam! It's good timing. And that's the same way he got Michael Moore out. It's like that slow shot. Mike pulled back. By the time he brought his head back, the shot just getting there. Bam! He thought he was free.
You know, one time Bert Cooper fought him, and George was making his comeback. And I said, "What'd you think of Foreman?" He says, "Well," he said, "I quit in the second round." He said, "He hit me on top of the head, so I thought he broke my damn neck." He said, "It was a slow punch coming in, wham." He said, "Jesus!" So I went back to the corner. And he said, "You going out there again?" He goes, "Nope." He said, "That man weighs 265 pounds. I'm only 190. I don't belong in there with him." And they were going to take his purse away. I don't remember what was the outcome of that.
He really that strong. He has to be when you know he swing down. He swing down so he go hit something anyway. So he come over to down.
heavy handed. As he got older, he could take a better punch too, Evander. He couldn't take a good shot. He used to be so tense when he fought as a young man. You saw him, I'm sure, reruns. That he would get exhausted by the fifth or sixth, seventh round. He was exhausted.
So relaxed as an older man. So relaxed.
He was so relaxed. Yeah. That's right. He was so relaxed. He knew how to pace himself much better. He wasn't out there to destroy everybody. Just let it happen, and he took a punch better, and he was able to go longer into the late rounds and still keep his power.
I do remember after that fight with Evander, the first thing George Foreman said was that he would have been heavyweight champion of the world if it weren't for Evander's chin. He said Evander had a great chin.
Well, you know, he caught me a few shots. Matter of fact, he hit me in the 11th round. He hit me in the 11th round. I came back and asked him, did he knock my teeth out? I just hit me so hard in the mouth. I go back and blew you short. You knock my teeth. I'm telling you, George, him and Leonard Stewart are only two fighters that they had to make a special made glove for their hand because their hand is thinner than a regular glove. So they had to make, he had big, big hands. And like that, so just to be at the end of that wrecking ball, I'm like, he catch you one of them, it could be bad, but the good thing is that because you can see them shots, and you can take it, take some of them, not all of them, but I was able to get out. He didn't hit me with the big ones.
I have a question. You've been the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world in both cruiserweight and heavyweight. You won a bronze medal in the light heavyweight division of the 84 Summer Olympics. You fought legendary fighters, Foreman, Holmes, Riddick Bowe, Ray Mercer, Tyson. Do you feel that you left anything undone in the world of boxing? Is there anything that you would have liked to have done that you don't think that you accomplished?
Well, you know, I actually wanted to end as an undisputed champion, you know, because that's pretty much what my goal was. My goal wasn't just say I won part of the belt. But, you know, I really wanted to, you know, I think it's kind of cheap in the game of boxing when, it, you know, the sports make a lot of money, of course, you got a lot of people, one person just don't monopolize it, but when it all comes down, you know, it should be an undisputed. This is the chance, you know.
Right.
You got three federations, and don't nobody come to the point of fight the best, and that people get an opportunity to see the great fight. I'm saying styles may fight, even though you may think this person good, but this person can't. You know, it's just certain people that's going to give me a harder time. You know, Alenda Slew is going to always give me a harder time because of his style. But guys that was aggressive, I fight guys aggressive real well. And I can eventually get the guy that's aggressive, but the guy that says, oh, you don't know, I don't think that I'm just going to, I'm a passive fighter. I never were really great with passive fighters, but guys that were aggressive like this. And so you look at styles of fighting, you'll find that some people with that awkward, like Ali couldn't fight with the boy from California, Ken Norton. He could never fight Ken Norton real good.
Right.
You take a Joe Frazier, somebody coming at him, he fights him real good. But, you know, the fight is just a boring fight when somebody's trying to get away from Ali, and he backing like this, and he's just blocking all this, like that. So, but that what made Ali had to come out of his style to fight certain people that made him the champ. And the same thing with me, I fought everybody.
Yeah.
If I fought the same type of person, I'm pretty much going to beat him every time.
Right.
Anybody that fight that style, I'm going to beat him. I've mastered that style. I get that style all the time. But, the whole big thing about the rating is that once you get in a rating, you have to fight all them guys in the rating. So of course, you're going to fight somebody who style kind of overwhelmed your style, and you have to come up with something new. And I think that would happen in the game of boxing, that they let now the champion to fight whoever he wants to fight. If that's the case, you know, you can be champion, you can have a great record.
Right.
Evander, we really appreciate all the time you've given us tonight, and we have our next guest on here. Maybe you could stick around and give Tony some, we got the Tony Thompson, who's a great friend of ours, a great friend of the show's, and was a super friend of my son Bob. He's fighting David Price in February 23rd over in England. I know you fought over overseas, and maybe you can give me some pointers on how to handle those guys, because Tony's a tremendous guy, and we're behind him 1,000%. We'd like to really see him be successful in this next fight here. Tony, how you doing?
I'm great, fellas. How y'all doing? How you doing, Evander?
Well, I'm doing great, man.
Great, man.
You know,
always.
Honestly, I guess the advice is that young people home turf, you have to take it to them first.
Yeah, I know that.
Right. Quickly.
Hey, Tony's style.
I'd like to ask you, Vander, what do you think the biggest key to your longevity was? Because, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, I don't mean, act as a host on the show, but I'm a fan of boxing, and Vander's always been one of my favorites. And I think, I'm 41 now, so, I like to know, you know, if you don't mind giving away your biggest secret, you think, to your longevity in this sport.
Well, my longevity was based on conditioning, so you know, I take a lot of naps. My mom said, son, don't burn that counter for both ends now. I said, everybody count to 6 this ain't long, but if you take them naps and all that, you make sure you get rest. Don't try to see too much all in one day. Tomorrow going to come, but you want to be ready for tomorrow. And so, you know, it was about conditioning. I realized that if I was in great condition, you know, everybody going, you're going to get hit sometime. But if you're in great condition, you'll recover faster and you'll be able to make the adjustment. Long as you're in great shape, and that condition, that great shape, allow you to recover faster, which give you a longer career, and it's not over. You know, my condition, you know, even now, I'm 50 years old. I'm in great shape. I stay in shape because I realized, I said, I may have one more fight. So I'm always thinking that that condition give you an opportunity.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate the information, man. I really do, man.
I appreciate that. You take care, man.
Thank you very much, man. Thank you, too. Happy holidays.
You, too. Bye-bye.
Well, Tony, tell us about your up-and-coming fight and how you're training for it. I know you have you've been across the pond before, and you know what it's like over there. And Evander did say, you know, you got to take it to them first, huh?
Well, you know, that's my style anyway. You know, I'm not a you know, I've evolved from my earlier parts of my career where I am a more of a pressing type fighter. You know, stay in your face type guy. I mean, against anybody except for Vladimir, of course. But, you know, I mean, the training's going great. I'm really looking forward to showing the fans and the people of the world and even the naysayers that I'm not done in this sport yet. I think I got a lot left to be said, and you know, I think my best years are still ahead of me.
Uh-huh. Well, let's say when you are successful in this next round here, given the fact that the WBA has come out and instructed Klitschko that he's got the fight, would you be looking to go after him or Povetkin or any of those?
Well, you know what? I mean, people don't realize this, man. You know, my last fight with Vladimir, after that performance, you really don't deserve another shot at the championship. That's just me. As a fan, if I saw me fight Vladimir, the second fight, not the first fight, I came in, you know, I gave my all. I did have an injury, but I gave my all. The second fight, you know, I was just selling myself, and it showed, and it really, you know, to be honest, you have to say you don't deserve another shot at Vladimir. Now, having said that, I want another shot at Vladimir.
Sure.
But I realized I have to do something special to get that shot. I don't think I can get it just by beating the mandatories and you know, the David Prices of the world. I think it helps. But I think it helps in getting me to the title shot against Vitaly. I got a plan. It's my plan, man. Me against Vitaly, the old guys, because, you know, me and Vitaly the same age just about. I knocked Vitaly's ass out. Then I used his belt as enticement to get Vladimir back in the ring with me.
Good marketing idea.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Sure.
Because if I was just to beat everybody and then be like, you know, I want to fight with Vladimir, nobody's really going to pay that any mind. I can't blame them. The marketing people, the fans, not even Vladimir. I mean, I beat you twice the last time you didn't even show up. Why would I give you another shot? Then you knock his big brother off. Now, what are they going to do? It's been known that the Klitschkos take up for each other. And sure. Vladimir wants all of those belts before he retired. So that would make it special. I have to do something special to get another crack at Vladimir. And that's my point.
You know, Tony, this is Ty. I watched the fight with you, the second fight with you and Vladimir a couple different times. And though he got you earlier, I don't think you looked as bad as you're stating. Actually, I thought you looked pretty good. I had to fight even up until the point where he got you.
And I thought you looked best when you were pressing the action, sticking that southpaw jab in his face. The commentators didn't give you credit, but I seen you land a couple mean straight lefts on Vladimir, which I'm actually kind of surprised he stood up to. But you landed some pretty flush punches on Vladimir. He just caught you. But I actually had to fight even at the point of the stoppage, though, to be quite honest with you. I don't think you look bad at all. I think you just got caught.
Well, I mean, you know, I appreciate it. But, you know, when I say I look bad, I'm strictly talking, you know, from my expectations of myself. You know, I fully expect every time I step in that ring to kick that other guy's ass, man. You know, that's just like what I expect. That's what I go in there for. And then, you know, even though he stopped me, you know, I felt I could have continued. And I didn't behave such as a fighter. Mm. Now, a lot of times you got to just be flat out honest with yourself. You can't walk around giving yourself kudos for a close fight and all that. It ain't there. To me, it wasn't it. It wasn't me. I'm desperate and anxious to show people I'm a better guy than that, man. And that I know how to beat Vladimir. I know I can beat Vladimir. If everything plays out for me in terms of my health, my conditioning, I think I'll go in there and I will show people, you know, how to beat Vladimir Klitschko. I really do.
Well, the David Price fight is a great opportunity for you. You know, he's considered the, you know, the next big prospect in Britain. He's kind of surpassed Tyson Fury and Chisora as possibly Britain's next big thing. So you going over there and whipping his ass would be huge over there, and it would send ripples across the pond back this way too.
Definitely. And the thing about it, you know, I got experience going into a local hometown favorite and you know, coming out the victor. I know what it takes over there. I'm not looking for a decision, believe me. I was in this same spot when I went over there and I fought Luan Krasniqi, and everybody told
me,
hey, Tony, you're not going to get a decision, so why go? I said, because I'm not looking for a decision. So,
yeah.
You know, it was an easy sell for me. I knew that guy was not going to make it to 12 rounds with me. I feel the same exact way with David Price. He's not going to make it 12 rounds with me. He's not.
Tony, after your performance against Vladimir, have you done anything new or tweaked anything to your style or to your training regimen or anything?
I don't really, you know, I mean, I don't mean to sound arrogant. I don't really think there's anything I need to do to my style or my conditioning. I think my biggest downfall, and, you know, I know a lot of people say that, you know, and try to make excuses. But I'm telling you guys, I've never made an excuse. I'm only telling you what I feel. My injuries and my health condition has always been my major downfall. Whenever I was in great health, I've always came in great shape, and I've always put on great fights. Matter of fact, my earlier fights, they looked so easy because I was in great shape. I was in great shape. I controlled Dominique Nguyen for 12 rounds out of nowhere. Nobody ever knew who I was. I stopped passing in his backyard. I mean, I know what I can do when I'm healthy. Now, so I spent these last few months trying to do the things that I need to do to get back totally healthy. And I think I'm reaching that point now where not only am I healthy, I'm confident in my health and my injury situation. So now I can go out there and just train hard and work hard and then go execute a game plan.
Hey, Tony, you're 41. I'm 43. You know, I train 6 days a week, so I know with guys our age, the biggest thing for us is we still have some of the reflexes, some of the speed, but the biggest thing for us is recovery from injury. It takes us just so much longer to recover. Has everything been running smooth for you? Have you been basically avoiding injury and giving the body time to recover, or basically just avoiding injury and not needing that recovery time as much?
Definitely, man. You know, that's one of the things I wanted to, you know, pick Evander's brain about, but he's probably never had to deal with any major injuries or health problems. Like you said, he's still in great shape. He's 50, and I believe that. And, you know, so I think his biggest thing was just conditioning. Well, it's hard to get in condition if your knees are buckling or if you're suffering from vertigo or whatever it is, you know, different ailments I've come across. It's hard to get up every day and be motivated like you're supposed to. When your body wants to, you know, shut down or break down. So my main focus was just,
you know, get your body back to where your mind is not affecting your body anymore. And what I mean by that, I'm not always thinking about, oh, my knees hurt, you know, oh, I'm a little dizzy today, you know. I can just go out there and do the things we used to do when I first started. All I did was train. I trained, I fought, I trained, I fought, I trained, it went together. You know, and I never deviated from that game plan. And I'm just looking forward to getting back to that aspect of my career, just being able to train.
So you think it's more of a mind state than physical?
Well, I know it's physical in there, but, you know, my physical has started to affect my mind. Even when your wife is telling you, baby, some of this stuff is in your mind, you know, it's time to look deep into that. But then again, you have to do the things to make sure it's not affecting your mind. You know, you can't just say it's in my mind and then continue to do the same things. I have to do the things to erase it from my mind.
Well, you know, it's psychological. It's just like a basketball player who injures his knee. He's always, at least, you know, when he first gets back on the court, he's going to have a hard time cutting. Even if his body can handle it mentally, he's going to always think, you know, this knee's not as strong as the other thing. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Have you gotten to the point where you've overcome these ailments to where you can train 100%? Because when you're going through these things, you just can't get up and train. And people don't necessarily understand that. If you get a tooth pulled today, you're going to miss a day of training tomorrow. It's just that simple. So
exactly. So, you know, I'm never going to be 100% again. I've had 3 major knee surgeries. That's just the realism of the situation. Having said that, do I think I can train hard enough to get myself in shape and do what I need to do? Yes, I really do. If I didn't think that, I wouldn't get in there with a 26-27-year-old, 6'8", 250-pound young guy like I'm about to face. I wouldn't put myself
in.
Exactly. I wouldn't even put myself in that type of dangerous situation, you know. I really think I'm able to get myself in enough condition and mentally and physically to go in there and do the job.
Well, Tony, Evander Holyfield went through a stretch of bad health problems, and he was advised to quit. They said your heart is affecting your stamina, and it's getting dangerous. You should really give the sport up. Well, he didn't believe anybody. He believed in himself, and he went on after that, and he made a 100% recovery. Do you recall when he was going through that problem when he fought Bobby Chiz and those guys, and he wasn't doing well, and he had no stamina, he ran out of gas, and then he totally rebuilt his conditioning program and made a strong comeback after that.
Oh,
but he was advised
very well.
Yeah, he was advised to quit. Remember, the doctors told him to quit?
I was one of those people, you know, hollering with the doctors. I mean, even though we never know the whole truth, we only get what we hear on the TV. I was one of those guys that we ran the Holyfield fans saying, you know, give it up. You've been champion. You've made money. Just retire and live a good life, you know. But you never know what's going to happen to another person.
You know, when he came back, he had to fight Mike Tyson. And I talked the guy out of betting 20. Guy wanted to put $20,000 on Evander. And I talked him out of the bet. And after the fight, he wanted to kill me. I had a hide out. I said, the guy's got health problems. Tyson will murder him. He'll never beat Tyson. I said, he can't do it. He don't have the strength and the stamina. And blah, blah, blah. And I talked him out of it. Oh, he was crazy. He went crazy at the end of the fight. Because the odds were pretty good. Local guy. He came in. Panarello's supposed to know all about it. He talked me the hell out of betting $20,000. He went to Las Vegas. What was comical, his buddy was driving, and he checked in his pockets, and he had the tickets, and he put the tickets on top of the car to put his coat on, and he drove to the arena, and he forgot to put the tickets back in his pocket. When he got to the arena, he didn't have any tickets. He couldn't get in. And on top of it, he didn't bet the $20,000. He wanted to shoot me that night.
You're right. He just had a bad day all the way around.
We didn't see the damn fight. And I listened to that dummy Panarello. He talked me the hell out of making about $60,000. Oh,
wow.
God. I laughed. We were all laughing when he came back and told the story.
If it ever makes him feel any better, my daughter did the same thing to me. They tough old, she talked me out of $500,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Right.
I normally play my birthday, and I'm giving this number everybody because when I give it to people, they usually win. 10/18. I go to the store with my daughter. You know, I'm playing my birthday, $100 straight, like I normally do. Every once in a while, I was like, okay, I'm playing my number. She says, Daddy, your birthday never comes out. Play my birthday. I said, oh well, okay, baby girl. Let's do it. $100 straight, 12/03, and 10/18 comes out straight the next day. I said, woman, you owe me $500,000. Like, wow.
That's funny.
Give him some hindsight. Give him some perspective.
You ever notice that hindsight's always 1,000% better than foresight?
Right. I can't give him no hindsight. I can give him some perspective on it, though. You know, I know his 60,000 seems like a lot, but I'm out of a cool half a meal.
Wow.
Be quiet,
that's
dog.
Funny.
Chris has got his protector out.
Oh, that's my little dog. Somebody dropping on the front door.
Oh, I know what's something. Happening.
Hey,
it was a great show.
The great show, guys. I enjoyed talking to Evander. I always wanted to ask him about that muscle-bound thing, but he was the first guy. He really blew that myth. That was a big thing in the local gyms and all, you know, with everybody's, damn, he did, look how he built himself up. Then everybody wanted to move up a division after that.
Yeah.
A lot of the lighter guys said, hell, I'm not going to fight as a lightweight anymore. I'm straining to make weight. I'll build myself up like Evander did, and I'll move up a division. He did a lot for boxing when he overcame that size and packed, you know, got up to about 216 as a heavyweight. He was successful. He gave a lot of guys a change of attitude. I noticed in our gym at Upper Darby, he became an example. Everybody followed his example. He was quite a guy, quite
but
a fighter.
But, you know, before the Lennox Lewis's and the Klitschko's and all those guys, most of the heavyweights was 210, 20, you know, 205, you know. With all the...
That transition era where Riddick Bowe come along and then Lennox Lewis, he just happened to be... He was fighting at a time when it was really difficult. Those guys, not only were they big, but they were good and they were fast.
And now it seems like you can't be a heavyweight contender without being 6'6 and 250 and from Europe. So, you know, it's time we do something about that.
Yeah. There you go. Well, Tony,
what do you think of the bigger Klitschko brother? He's very difficult to fight.
I think both of them, you know, and they have their own ways of being difficult. But I always thought Vladimir was the better fighter, boxer. You know,
better boxer, no question about it.
Yeah, I thought Vili might have been the better warrior, but you know, but they both were great in their own right. So.
But he's very awkward, and it's hard to fight an awkward fighter like that. He sticks that left hand out, and then he throws that right hand. It's hard. It's like George Foreman. Same effect as George. It's slow. It's coming, but it's hard to get out of the way sometimes, you know?
Right. And he might throw it so long, he might hit you, you know, after you didn't dodge it and came right back to it. So.
Well, good luck in your fight in England. What will it be on? Will it be a pay-per-view?
I think it's Wealth TV over there.
Wealth
TV. I think you can get it online. You can get Wealth TV online for all the folks that's interested in seeing. I'm urging you to get you some Wealth TV.
Box Nation will probably stream it, too.
Exactly. So I'm looking to do something big, man. So I wouldn't tell people to go out and get this if I wasn't really motivated, ready for this fight. So.
All right. Sound like you got the right attitude. It's a great, great attitude to have.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we really, really, we are keeping a good thought for that win. When you come back, we want to get you back on the air so we can talk about what your next step is and how you're going to be so proud to be an Eagles fan by the end of tomorrow.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. Do we really want to go there right now? Do we want to turn this into the RG3 show?
Yeah, I don't think Butch should go there. I don't think he should go there. Unless you're talking about who's going to get the higher draft pick, I don't think he should go there.
Really want to start this up right now because somebody told me a picture of some in a dress. That was all I'm going to say.
I think a bet needs to be made, gentlemen.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we have a standing bet, and I haven't gotten paid from the first bet. So I need my payment, okay?
Well, Tony, I hope you and your family have a fantastic holiday season, and we're behind you 1,000% here, all the guys, and we want to thank you for coming on tonight, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you on and off the air, and I just want to tell you how much your friendship means to all of us.
Oh, thanks, guys. You guys have a great holiday, too, and I look forward to speaking to you after my great victory in February. So,
yeah, there we go.
Great.
That's
thanks,
good
Tony,
attitude.
And good luck, bro.
All right, thanks, man. Bye-bye.
All right.
As we close out here, Chris, we want to wish you and the family, Lance and all the kids, a very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and I really appreciate everything you're doing for the show. You really.
I have something to talk to Tex Cobb about now. I'm going to tell him I talked directly to Evander Hoffa, but he won't believe me. I'm going to call him. He's in Washington, in the state of Washington, and Evander was his favorite fighter. He would bet on, he just loved the Van Outfield. So, I'm going to tell him about that because we had a million arguments on that muscle bound bit and all that. Because Tex never lifted a weight in his life. He just was naturally big. He played football at college of Wilbert Montgomery played at. It was a 2-year school.
Uh-huh.
But he never worked out.
Wilbert
said big. Yeah, what the hell is the name of it?
Wilberforce?
I'm trying I can't think of the name of it now. The Eagles halfback, Montgomery, went there.
Yeah.
And you know who else went there? The linebacker for Dallas. The hot shot.
Hollywood Henderson?
Hollywood Henderson, yeah, he went there. That's where he got out of. He graduated from there, and he went right into pros. Yeah, Hollywood Henderson.
That you brought up, Wilbur. I gotta tell you a story that when Bobby was in high school, I had a small construction company on the side, and we were doing a house next to Wilbur's house up in the Meadows, up in South Philly there, and every time that Wilbur would come in or out of his house. No matter what Bobby was doing, he dropped it, had to go talk football with Wilbur. Well, we put him on a piece of finish for some paneling that we had done, and I guess Wilbur must have come home because when he came back, the paneling looked okay, and 2 days later after they shut the door the second time, a piece of molding fell off the top. Bobby only put one piece of
nail in it. I'll tell you what, the Eagles, boy, that's my pet peeve. Don't get me started on Andy Reid. Man.
Uh-oh.
I have more arguments about that guy. Oh, God. We're all diehard old Eagles fans, and I abandoned him. I really abandoned him. But he still buys season tickets. He gives them away every go, but he still buys. He's waiting for Andy Reid to get. So we'll see what happens. All right, guys, have a nice holiday.
Hi, Chris. Thanks.
My son's at the
front door. See you in January.
All right, guys. Bye.
Okay, Z, you were on first, so I guess, Ty, you can lead us out tonight.
I tell you what, Butch, way to come through with the surefire first ballot Hall of Famer in Evander, the real deal Holyfield, one of the greatest heavyweight fighters of all time. That's quite a coup for this end-of-the-year type show. Bob is our co-pilot, and I look forward to talking to you guys again shortly.
Great. See?
Yeah. I also want to thank everyone who joined us, Evander Holyfield, Dr. Chris Panarello, and good luck to Tony Thompson in this upcoming fight in February overseas. I also want to thank my boxing family, Fighting Words Network. This show's definitely in memory of Bob. And everyone, please be safe during the holidays. Butch?
Well, I have one announcement to make to our public, and that is that Kelly Pavlik will be on with us our second show in January, and we are working diligently to get two other super strong fighters on. I can't say who they are at this point because I'm still in negotiation with the people, but it's going to be next year's show is going to be bigger and better because I've got the same co-host on, and with Chris joining us, it gives us a four-spread backup, so it's going to be bigger and better shows next year. Again, I want to thank everybody for listening to us around the world, especially Trevor J., Ty Anthony, Brady Quinn, Caden, Jaden, Brianna, and little Benny. We love you guys. Everybody else, a very Merry Christmas. Please stay safe. Don't drink and drive. If you have to drink, have somebody, a designated driver, drive for you. Please, when you're out there, remember these shows come to you each and every night. Grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of police and fire services. Please, when you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, introduce your children to them, tell them they are the good guys, and just, if you can, just say thank you. We also dedicate these programs to in memory of fallen officers, Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, LA Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell from the Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle of the Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford of the Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro of the Philadelphia Police Department, Patrolman Alonzo Moses of the Philadelphia Police Department, Patrolman Brian Murphy of the Plymouth Township Police Department, and we're going to dedicate for the next 26 weeks to each of the children who lost their lives at Sandy Hook School. My brothers and sisters and little ones, you may be 10-7 at this point in time, but at some time we're going to be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the sun shine on your field. On your face. May the rains fall softly on your field until we meet again. May the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezah yilama, son ashen evorat fet, hakuig again ma yilama. Grief and pain are all I know.
County dispatch call 1999. County dispatch to 1999. County dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 is now 10-7. May God rest his soul. Christmas.